The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Oh, man, football season's over. It's so sad, and there's nobody more depressed than our friend Cousin Sal. Sal Iacono, Jimmy Kimmel Live. Sal, you lost America about $3 million on Sunday.
I know. I feel terrible. I really do.
Do you want to recap what happened?
Not really, but I guess I came on your podcast last week and spoke highly of the proposition that Gary Russell would not score a touchdown. This is the third string tailback for the Steelers. Apparently he gets goal line carries.
3-1 odds that he wouldn't score.
3-1 odds. You had to lay 3-1. And I went off about it for a good 10 minutes, and I'm like, this guy's just not scoring. It's not going to happen. I just have a feeling.
You said that the Steelers, if they scored, they wouldn't be in situations where they were on the 1 yard line.
Right.
So their scores would come with longer yardage, which meant he would not get in the game.
That's what I thought. It would be a pass happy game. And either way, he had 3 touchdowns in 18 previous games. So 3-1 odds, I thought, was still in my favor. And
he's not that good in the first place.
Not that good. Yeah.
So the game starts. We're at a Super Bowl party at our cousin Jimmy's.
Right.
It's about 150 people there, split into two rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers drive down, get inside the 5, get to the 2, and then Gary Russell comes in.
Right.
But doesn't
right
score. But
loses,
gets stuffed.
What, 4 yards, right?
Yeah, loses 4 yards, gets stuffed. Roethlisberger sneaks it in. They challenge it. Tomlin kicks the field goal, even though they're on the 4-inch line. We went crazy about that.
Yeah.
Gary Russell doesn't get his tee. We forget about him. And then it comes back later. They're down again. He rams it in.
Right,
it was
away.
Great. It was a great, funny moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My bookmaker was doing cartwheels. He loved it.
You know, though, and so you were so adamant about it last week that I almost felt like you changed Russell's destiny for the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. Or Mike Tomlin doesn't. I know we're trying to get Tomlin on the show sometime this week on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and I'm going to have to talk to him about it because, yeah, I really kind of feel like this was a personal thing, and he went out of his way to screw me and indirectly your readers and listeners.
Well, you moved the line. The line moved from -300 to -320, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if Vegas was maybe people were loading up and they had to make it higher. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, even a jerk like me, I never thought was fat enough to move the line, but it worked out. But I don't know. I don't know what to say other than, listen, here's how I'll make it up to everyone. Mike Sellers, the Arizona fullback, is -300 to not score in the Pro Bowl. He is not. Bill, listen to me now. He is not. No, I can't do this. I can't do this.
Is that really a prop?
No, it's not. I made it up.
Well, can we do what's while we're on the subject? Can we do the Pro Bowl line?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it is.
All right, go ahead. I didn't know who was sitting out or what, but I guessed it.
You guessed it exactly?
No. I made a guess.
I'm going to guess NFC by 3.
Oh, wow. So I said AFC -2, and it's a pick.
Oh, you won. So you get the last win.
I get the last one. I get the free steak dinner. This
no.
is great. I can't believe this all worked out.
No, you already lost the steak dinner.
Unbelievable.
Hey, speaking of that.
Hold on. Let me just say, why don't people, you know, I mentioned a bunch of props. Why didn't people jump on my the Cardinals will rough the holder prop at +650,000 to 1?
Well, what about our friend Daniel with the safety bet at 50 to 1 that Larry Fitzgerald and then Santonio Holmes ended up screwing up? That was exciting.
He had 50 to 1 odds that the last score of the game would be a safety or something other than a touchdown or field goal, right?
Who would bet that? Like, who would even think to bet that?
He's a nut. He every year he had that. I couldn't even find someone to take this, but he had that the Bears would score exactly 2 points against the Colts a few years back, and it was like $100,000 to $1 or something. They wanted to put $50 on it. I'm like, what am I? I'm going to chase people down to pay you this? This is crazy. I can't
pay you $1 million because finished 34-2. Why aren't there Pro Bowl props? I just went onto a illegal offshore gambling site, and
I think they just don't care. They can't figure it out. Well, I mean, there's no gauge of how long anyone's going to play, and, you know, there's different rules. There's no blitzing and everything, so.
So basically our football gambling season is now done for eight months.
You shouldn't even really bet on that. I would never, ever try to convince someone to not gamble, but, just stay away from the Pro Bowl, for crying out loud.
You know, I did get a couple emails from people saying, if anyone bet on that Gary Russell thing, it's their own fault because – Cousin Sal was way off in the lines all year, and we had a whole pattern of gambling incompetence from him. And
that's right.
I thought that was harsh. I didn't agree with that assessment.
That is harsh. But listen, didn't we talk about the MVPs? didn't we have all the Steelers receivers and Polamalu? And
we did. I want to know where the prop went that I saw when I was on the – where we even talked about it, the non-QB plus 220. I could not find that by the weekend. It was just maybe too many people bet it and it just disappeared.
Well, you know what? Another one that disappeared, another one that our friend Daniel had that he didn't – he wasn't bragging about too much. But then towards the end of the week it disappeared, that the Cardinals will receive the kickoff. Was minus 160. I think we talked about this last.
Oh, that was a terrible bet. Yeah.
But it was almost like, I don't know, we should have researched it, how it worked in the playoffs. But so the Cardinals win the toss, they defer, and the Steelers take the ball.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Well, he celebrated it because the Cardinals won the toss.
Yeah.
And then you came in and said, hey, the Steelers are getting the ball, and he thought you were kidding.
I know.
And then you weren't kidding, as we saw.
Yeah, he looked at me for like 20 minutes arguing. No, they're not. No, they're not. I'm like, well, just turn around. You're going to miss it. They're getting
turn around. Gary Russell is now returning the kick.
But it was a weird game to me. Like, Tomlin, it really seemed to – they really screwed that kicking a field goal in the first drive.
Yes.
The taking the points off the board, that is so overstated. Like, you never take points off the board. Well, what if you kicked a field goal and there was a personal foul and it gave you first and goal at the one? Then you take points off the board, right? Like,
yeah.
This is a stupid statement. You would never take points off the board. You have a 250-pound quarterback and the great Gary Russell behind him, and you have to move 3 inches. It doesn't seem like you're taking points off the board.
I wrote that yesterday.
Yeah.
They basically announced to everybody that they had no confidence that they get 4 inches.
Yeah, and not only that, yeah, right. And like you pointed out, I think, so you don't get it, you go on defense, you're probably going to get the field goal back, right, in three plays.
Yes.
Or you know, even if they get a first down, you're going to have good field position after they punt. So
anybody in the Football Outsider guys have been on this from the get-go, and Easterbrook's been on it. I mean, anybody who has an IQ over 90 has figured this out by now, that there's really no downside. If you punch it in, it's a huge momentum swing. If you don't get it, it's kind of a momentum swing for the defense, but they're still on the 1-inch yard line.
Yeah.
You know, and you might, you know, anything can happen. You might get a safety. You might get a tip ball, or who knows. Worst case scenario, you stop them. You get the ball back on, like, your own 40, and you do it again. You can get the field goal then.
Right. It's far from being the worst thing. I mean, that would be that would have been the Cardinals' first play from scrimmage. First down at the 3-inch line, had the Steelers not made it on fourth down. They don't have the butterflies out. Like, what kind of play do you even run there on your first play?
Right. I'm of the opinion that if you're over midfield, then it's fourth and less than one, you go for it.
Yeah.
We always talk about this. Like, you judge something by, if you're the other team or you're rooting for the other team, or you bet on the team, what do you want the other team to do?
Yeah.
And in this case, if I'm a Cardinals fan, or if I bet on the Cardinals and it's fourth and inches, I really want the Steelers to kick a field goal. I do not want them to go for it. So I don't know why that hasn't translated to actual football. Peter King wrote that Mike Tomlin, he was conjecturing, or whatever that word is. I can't pronounce English anymore. But he was saying that Mike Tomlin maybe thought that points were tough to come by in the game. Which is why he took the field goal, saying, oh, I'll get the three, not realizing that the game would be 50 points.
See,
I don't agree with that. I just think he had no confidence.
They became too complacent towards the end. They were happy to have 20 points, and that's what ended up screwing them. It was reminiscent of last year. I'm sorry to bring it up, Patriots-Giants, but at the end of the third, beginning of the fourth quarter was the same way. But, yeah, you have to always always go for it there. It makes no sense.
Well, watching the game again, I just and I never understand when teams don't do this. The Pats had the same issue against the Giants. Just you have a good passing game, you have a good quarterback, and whatever you're doing isn't working, just go to no huddle. Just try it for a series. See what happens.
Yeah, right.
The defense, especially the Steelers, because they're subbing in all those guys, like, that's what you want to do against them. It was a weird game. I thought it was very entertaining, but I think when, you know, really, like, looking back at it and all the penalties and all the weird coaching calls and, you know, the defensive screw-ups, like, how does Fitzgerald split the middle?
Yeah.
You got two safeties back. And then, you know, by that last drive, a few readers pointed this out. So Hines Ward is limping around. He basically did nothing in the second half. Nate Washington hurt one of his arms and was, like, basically playing with one arm on the last drive. Mm-hmm. Holmes was the only guy Pittsburgh had that could do anything. And somehow he was wide open over and over again until the last touchdown when he somehow caught it anyway. But I just thought it was a bad job by the Cards.
It was a weird game. It really was. I mean, obviously that play before half was just a killer, I thought.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, the Steelers were favored for the second half, getting back to gambling. Second half line had the Steelers favored. It ended up going down to even. But I was like, oh, my God, that's right. That was just a momentum killer.
Can you have a momentum killer, though, when it's a 30-minute halftime?
Yeah, I guess not. I guess not, yeah.
I got a lot of emails because, you know, I thought Harrison's arm hit the ground before his head hit the end zone.
You think so? I know.
I really did.
You sent me that picture. How do you take that away from that guy?
I guess you can't.
That's one of the greatest plays you'll ever see. I mean,
well, but the Steelers fans, who, by the way, have maybe the biggest inferiority complex of any fan base, but that's all other stuff. Yeah. Steelers fans were pointing out that Larry Fitzgerald ran out of bounds for like 40 yards on that play and then was involved in the tackle.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a penalty. But then Lamar Woodley clearly clipped the guy on the 30-yard line. That was a penalty. So they were like, it evened out. But it doesn't work that way. You can't just say hypothetically those two plays evened each other out.
If you talk about like a pro wrestling kind of play, like it almost looked fixed the way before Harrison even intercepts the ball, they're building a wedge for him downfield. You know,
right.
How do they know this is like a punt return all of a sudden? It's
that
crazy that they know they want to play offense here, the Steelers defense. So
it was a great play. I mean, he definitely deserved to score. I think that would have been amazing if it had been overturned and they gave the Steelers the ball on the 1-inch yard line, but the half had ended.
Yeah.
That would have been unbelievable. And there wasn't enough to overturn it. I just thought that the ruling on the field should have been, you know, that he was down. But what do I know?
Now, let me ask you this. I know no one wants to hear about these other prop bets I had, but I did have Harrison at MVP at 30-1. And after that play, I was like, give it to – I don't care – if the Cardinals win by 40, he's got to get it after this. And then do you think it had something to do with that he started beating up the other team, that they didn't give him the MVP? Or I know that last drive for Holmes was great, but what a play. 100-yard return, he doesn't get MVP.
I was just going to ask you if you thought it was him mugging. Although the Steeler fans who defend everything, I actually like the Steeler fans. Like, at least they're passionate.
They don't like you. A few of them don't.
Yeah, they don't like me. They're not fans of mine. But the Steelers fans claim that Harrison got punched in the Family Jewels, and that's why he got so upset.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. We couldn't see that from the replay, but they're claiming that there was – you could see the guy's arms swing up between Harrison's legs, and that's what made Harrison so mad.
Well, for God's sake, if a guy doesn't deserve MVP after that, I don't know what.
My theory was that the 2006 disgraced Steelers team doctor maybe made a mistake when he sent the shipment to Harrison's house. But I don't know. It's one or the other.
Does he have a float in today's parade? I'm going to have to put it on. Okay.
He has a float that's bigger than the other floats. I don't think you could top what Holmes did on that last drive. I just thought he was amazing.
I guess not. That pass was incredible. I mean,
better
than Montana to Clark. It almost seemed like it was over two or three defenders, so it might have been.
I needed like 2 more hours with the column I handed in yesterday. I didn't pay enough credit to Roethlisberger in that game in the last drive. He was amazing in that last drive.
Yeah.
He really was.
He was.
It ranked up there with any drive that really any QB has had last 40 years in any big game. Made it, especially that 3rd-and-6 play when he was like kind of shifting around and Yeah. And, through the perfect pass.
You and I have ever seen a quarterback with as good field awareness as Roethlisberger. The way he, I mean, half the passes he throws, I was like, oh, he was over the line there. That's coming back.
Yeah.
Like, no, wow, look, he's running right, you know, parallel to the line there, and he gets rid of it. So.
He reminds me of Marino, the way he can kind of move around without really moving, but evade all these guys that are flying around. That's just what Marino used to do. And then, you know, he's not a scrambler like Elway was or anything, but he does have a knack for being able to create some space to kind of extend the play. And I don't really remember another QB doing that like he does. I guess Brady does a little, but for some reason it seems more compelling when Roethlisberger's doing it.
Well, but he does, I still, with all that said, I still think he makes a few stupid choices. And that that touchdown to Holmes against the Ravens easily could have been a pick six. We talked about it
you know,
the other way. But I wonder, and I argued with our friend Dave Damashek, as he loses his mobility over the years, is it going to be a Brett Favre type thing where you're like, let's just see how ridiculous this interception is?
And yeah, I do think that's how this plays out. But I don't think that happens for another 6-7 years.
Really? Wow. Because
he's only, what is he, 25, 26?
Yeah. Yeah, but he's riding cross country. He's going from Bryce Canyon to Niagara Falls on the motorcycle. So you never know.
Well, the other thing that is interesting about him is even if he's having a bad game, he can always rally for one drive,
which is
a rare quality for a QB. And kind of the exact, you know, not to pick a blister here, but kind of the exact opposite of Romo.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Well, Romo plays well, but then in the big drive, in the big moment, has a tendency to self-destruct. And Roethlisberger is kind of the opposite sometimes.
He rises to the occasion. Yeah.
Or it can shake off three bad quarters or mediocre quarters or up and down quarters and somehow put it together. Because, you know, the second half, he really didn't play well in the Super Bowl. And then in that last drive was just lights out.
But they're also more they're more of a team, too, the Steelers. They can't even compare them to the Cowboys. Like, I wish our best receiver only used to sell marijuana. You know, Owens and Roy Williams, and it just makes me sick after a while.
You know what's funny? I remember thinking after Holmes won the MVP, I remember thinking, all right, well, this is it. Nobody will ever call this guy San Antonio Holmes ever again. Now he's famous enough. This one. So I'm driving home, and I'm listening to the Westwood One post game. I'm driving home from the party, and Mark Malone is interviewing either Tomlin or Roethlisberger. I can't remember, but he's like, talk about San Antonio Holmes and what he did.
No.
I'm like, look, Mark Malone, not only a media guy, but played in Pittsburgh.
Former Steeler, yeah.
Yeah, former Steeler, and can't get this. So I think it's over for Holmes. He'll never.
What else does he need to do?
Yeah, he'll always be San Antonio, I guess.
Yeah. But you know what? People are not having a difficult time pronouncing Gary Russell's name.
No, they're not.
Me, I guess.
I think this is going to be I think the 2009 season is really going to be your year.
My year?
Yeah, this next season, I think.
Really?
You know, I think you needed to struggle. You need a little adversity, a little misery. You know, you didn't do well in the Lions. Your big prop lost.
I think
you're going to regroup, Rocky style.
Well, that'd be great. That'd be great. Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is the best time of year to root for the Mets, and then and the Cowboys too. I guess right around draft time. But
when are we doing the steak dinner?
When should we do this?
I think we should do it this weekend.
Let me just say, but before you cut me off here, I want to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I liked your column a lot, except for the last line with the. What did you even say? This is why you never go to a Super Bowl party. What did you miss going to one of the big Hollywood Super Bowl parties of all time?
Well, I missed what I missed was that I had to stay up that night until like 2 a.m. and then get up early the next morning to finish that column when I just could have been writing it as the game was going along. So I guess I didn't miss anything.
You talk to me on a Tuesday and Mike Lombardi, and then you could sleep the rest of the week. I mean,
that's
true. Are you really that self-important? Like Hunter S. Thompson, you got to be back in your man cave writing a column? Come on.
Do you want to – you really think that was the greatest Hollywood Super Bowl party that's ever happened?
It was pretty good. I don't know. You didn't think so?
It was pretty good.
Drunk with Carolla. There was some celebrities there.
Carolla got so drunk that I decided just to call him Ace in the column. Just to remove some of the stink.
Let me tell you something. Ace is in the hole for sure with his last three bets. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what he's going to
do. I like that. I thought there was some John Hamm, Ben Affleck tension.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was some leading man tension. Like maybe they had gone up for the same role at some point, or something weird had happened.
It's funny. I noticed that between Tom Arnold and John Hamm, but not Affleck and Hamm. But
I saw Tom Arnold. I was in one room, and all of a sudden he was saying goodbye to everybody. I didn't even know he was there. Who was he watching the game with?
Well, I think Kurt Menefee was there. He was emailing me. He's like, get me five squares. He's crazy. He's a great guy, but he's just nuts. He's like, get me five squares. You got to hold on to five squares for me. And then I did. I buy him the five squares, and I said, he didn't even care what his numbers were. After the game, he asked me if he won. He checked. It's posted all over the house, all these, all the 100 boxers. But
That was Kurt Menefee?
Yeah. Yeah,
I would have introduced myself.
You see? Change the last line of that column now.
Yeah, that was, I didn't know, yeah, you're right. Now that I know Kurt Menefee was there, I feel totally different about everything. There was a lot of people, and I got to say, it was hard to concentrate on the game.
Yeah.
Well, you were you were pacing around. You were going from room to room and just wobbling around, and you were, really, I've never seen you in such a hyper frenzy. You were holding sheets.
I have sheets and sheets of stuff written down, and it ends up being like a beautiful mind, but I can't even figure out what I wrote down. I have like
can't figure out what bets you have. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to kill Gary Russell, I'm pretty sure I have a problem with every single play after a while. You know, if you have, you know, you have the Steelers, but you have the under, and you don't want Roethlisberger to go over yards, and you're rooting for certain MVPs. It's miserable. But at one point I announced, I said, I'll be happy to have the 8 months off. This is just crazy. I can't. I'm looking at my son. I'm like, he's going to have to go to junior college for the first 3 years. Lose a lot of money. And now, even when I got home, and I'm sure you're the same way, Sunday night, it just, what the hell do we do now for the next 31 weeks?
For some reason, I was excited to finish the season.
Yeah.
It lacked all logic. And I've always had the axiom that whatever team did their thing the best was the team that was going to win the Super Bowl. And then after that game, I'm like, I don't know what the Steelers did best. Like, they gave up 377 yards to Warner.
Yeah.
And they, you know, if it wasn't for that Harrison play, I don't know. Did the Cards win that game by 10? Like, I don't know what.
That's just a good way to make the season.
Like, yeah. Pittsburgh won the title, and we play the season. You know, I'm not complaining about how it turned out. It just feels weird to me that they were the best team.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't want to bring this up.
Gary Russell was going to be the MVP, and that's all that matters.
I can't bring this up because it makes me a homer. But why don't you bring it up? If Bernard Paul,
what?
Well, I'm going to say you brought this up, even though I'm bringing it up.
All right, go on.
You telepathically convinced me to bring this up. If Bernard Pollard doesn't put the hit on Brady and Brady plays the whole season, do the Pats win the Super Bowl?
I think they're a 9-7 team with Brady this year.
No, I'm being serious. Were the Pats the best team, and the Brady injury changed that, and the Steelers moved into that vacuum, but really the Pats were the team that was supposed to win? I don't know. I'm asking. You're an objective observer. I'm asking.
Do they win the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, are you thinking they win 12, 13 games with Brady, and then they get home field advantage over?
Yeah, they win. They win at least two more with Brady.
So they have home field advantage over 10. Like, I can't even say, like, yeah, all right, so what? They win 15 games, and they get home field meant nothing. So, like, eventually they would have had to play the Steelers at home or the Ravens at home, right?
But remember, our defense kind of fell apart as the season went along. So it's probably more of a shootout. I don't know. I really don't know the answer.
You know what, Bill? You're getting a free steak out of this. I'm not giving you a Saturday night. The Patriots
win. Well, here's my next question. If it's not windy at Giant Stadium in round two for that ridiculous game that Eli just couldn't throw the ball into the wind and the Giants take care of business, do they win the Super Bowl?
Giants Steelers would have been great. This game was great, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought the Giants were the best team.
I still feel the Giants had the best team. The Steelers seemed like they won a lot because of chemistry and camaraderie and the fact that Roethlisberger could make plays, and their defense showed up for that Ravens game. But the Giants still, I don't understand how they get bounced.
I think a Wade Phillips coached Giants team would have been well. I think we could agree on that.
Wait, now what do you make of the Romo Jessica rumors?
What are they saying? That they're engaged or something?
Star Magazine said he cheated on her.
Oh.
She's gained weight. I don't know. This isn't good for you.
I know. God, I wish he could just concentrate on this game, on the season.
On the Pro Bowl?
Gonna be with him. Yeah. No, he's not even in the Pro Bowl. So.
He didn't make the Pro Bowl?
He won't get crap for going to Hawaii. I'm positive he didn't. It's Eli Warner and who would be the other one?
Eli?
Yeah.
How did Eli make it?
Romo missed a few games. His stats didn't stack up, really.
That's
who's
a weird
quarterback.
One.
Who could it be?
As long as DeLome didn't make it, I don't really care who else made like,
what's his name? Atlanta. No. Who is it?
Probably Matt Ryan, right?
Maybe it is Ryan.
Do you think if DeLome had made the Pro Bowl, he would have bowed out after his disgraced performance?
What a disaster. What a disaster.
Guys, I'm not going to go to Hawaii. I just feel bad about what happened.
That really screwed us up. We would have had a lot of money if that game would have gone differently, right?
Yeah. This Cardinals thing is amazing. Like, I think we're going to look back like 2 years from now and just be blown away by this whole thing.
I know.
But anything else we got to cover?
Gary Russell does not score against the Panthers or Giants defense. Take that to the bank.
Anything else we have to cover?
I think that's it. I'm getting sad. It's over, but take the NFC.
When are we going to talk to you again?
Maybe March Madness. Maybe we'll get a little March Madness going or something.
Oh, yeah, maybe we'll do some props.
I'm excited, yeah.
You're going to go to Citi Field in April, right?
Yeah, that'll be fun. You in there or what?
I want to go at some point, but I think when you go to Citi Field, we'll do a podcast out.
Let's pick a date.
I want to get your take. As I told you on Monday, I drove by it on going to JFK, and it is, not even kidding, three times as big as Shea, which is right next to it. Shea looks like just a little blip next to it. It's really sad. Shea was just basically this just round bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this Citi Field is just this complex. It's beautiful.
I love it. I'm very excited. They should build another stadium that we could play in just for the last week in September. Just to remind everyone that things are different and we're about to choke.
If any team needed a new stadium, it was the Mets.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think you guys signed Bobby Abreu is how this plays out.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I like that move for you.
Where does Manny go? Real quick. I can't believe that this is astounding to me that no one wants this guy for two years.
I can't get over it. The team that makes sense is the Nationals. Just sign Manny. Give him $90 million for 3 years.
Yeah.
People will come to see Manny. People in Washington would go to see Manny. They would care. Just do it.
But if 1 year... Is he turning down? It's just not enough money for 1 year because he turned down the Dodgers. But
yeah, he turned it down.
Otherwise, give him $40 million for 1 year. If it's really just about winning a title, anyone could give him $40 million. Any of his top four or five teams, and they'll be in good shape, right?
I do think all these teams are terrified of the economy because we're seeing attendance starting to drop in basketball, but baseball, when you have 81 home games, is a whole other story. And even like. You know, whatever. Even if it's a $40 ticket and you're taking your wife and your two kids, it's $160 and parking's $25 and then food, that's a $250 day by the time.
It's a lot. I guess if you don't think you're going to sell jerseys, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and then nobody's buying jerseys. And then, like, what do the Tigers do? The Tigers are, you know, in the most depressed city right now in the country, and they had this $100 million payroll.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of bargains available in June. Miguel Cabrera, Alexis Rios, like those type of guys.
We'll have something to talk about.
We're
going to do a baseball draft. People aren't happy with this fantasy basketball draft.
Oh.
The draft itself was good, but... James,
they're not happy with the league now?
What's that?
What's wrong with the league?
I don't know. It just seems that, you know, whoever... running away with it that's it. Like the 8 teams are out of it already.
Yeah, but that's fantasy basketball. That's the loophole with fantasy hoops.
No, we never figured it out.
Nobody's figured it out. There's no way to figure it out. All right, well, listen. What was this, week 21? I think there's been 21 straight weeks for us.
21. Good times, buddy.
It was good times. I think we really pushed it to another level. All right, next year we got to come up with some wrinkle. I'm thinking maybe instead of guessing every game, maybe we guess 5.
All right.
And
whatever
it
gives
us more
time. Maybe I just
to...
keep shut and my mouth shut and don't predict anything. I don't want the listeners hating me.
Well, I think you make up for Gary Russell next year. But thank you though, and
thanks,
we'll talk to you.
Boy.
All right, it's a great job by you, Sal. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. All right, for the last time in the 2008 season, even though it's now 2009, I never understood why the NFL the year goes from one year to the next, but then they pretend it's still the last year. But anyway, Mike Lombardi, it's the year of Lombardi, and were you at the Super Bowl, Mike?
I was there for the couple of days. I came to the state of New Jersey to watch it, so I wasn't physically there at the game. I don't like to stay for the games as much as because it's a mess trying to get out of there the next day.
Yeah, I was hoping to see you when they kept showing Larry Fitzgerald Sr. I was hoping to see you sitting next to him.
Well, you know, we're both distinguished alums of Valley Forge Military Academy, so we've got to keep it in our family.
I had a reader send me a theory that, if you noticed, NBC didn't show Larry Sr. until like a few seconds after, and they never showed the replay of him reacting. Mm-hmm. I have a theory he was going crazy in the press box, and everybody just made a pact not to talk about it. What do you think?
I believe that he is very calm and very poised during the game. I think he feels like there's a lot of attention drawn to him, so I think he has to almost act calm. Because I think everybody's looking for him. He can't act like I did at the New England Patriot game when the tuck rule happened and I jumped up and said, "We've won the game," and Hart McNally behind me screamed, "Sit down," and I had a cheer in the press box. I don't think he can behave like that.
I just forgot what I was going to say. I had a great point about cheering in the press box. When you were watching Larry Sr., did you have Art Shell flashbacks?
When you wrote that yesterday, I was laughing out loud when I read that.
That was the Art Shell look.
Just... I didn't really think of it at the time, but then the scene came back to me, and I thought, geez, that was, yes, I've seen that look before. I just couldn't place it.
That was the Art Shell. I can't believe they just called that unnecessary roughness, but I lacked the emotion to react to it, the face. Let's talk about the game. Here's my first question. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you feel that the best team in the NFL in the 2008 season won the Super Bowl?
No, that I don't feel. I feel the best team was the Tennessee Titans. And I wrote about this today, that the Steelers may actually have a better team next year, because this Steeler team, really, when you look at it, has some significant holes, especially in their offensive line. And I know Ben cheered his team for the great play of the offensive line, but they really struggled to block, run block and pass protect. And Ben's sturdiness and his ability to stay in the pocket and avoid tacklers really made them much better than they were. But I think next year the Steelers can be a much better team. They've got no help out of their draft this year, really, when you analyze it. Mendenhall, Swede.
Well, Mendenhall got hurt, though.
But nobody made a contribution. At the end of the day, they got nothing out of their draft, regardless of the reason. They got nothing out of their draft. So they'll get that draft class back. It'll be better. They have four offensive linemen who will be a free agent. I really believe they'll draft offensive linemen or sign up. I think they can be better, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win another Super Bowl.
So you think that next year's team will be better than this year's team potentially, which means that they might be able to repeat?
Well, it might mean that, but I think when you look at the core of their team, Woodley, Harrison, Palamoa, you know, Timmons is going to become a starter now, and they'll let Larry Foote go. That defensive structure is not going anywhere, and they're really good on defense. In spite of giving up over 400 yards in 27 minutes to the Cardinals, they win so many games with their defense. You know, they got a free agent in Brian McFadden. They'll have to do something at corner to help themselves, but that's what free agency in the draft's all about.
Yeah, I had all these little rules for – if a team wins the Super Bowl, here are the things that probably are in place. Like, one of them is you get something out of your draft picks. At least two of them have to contribute right away. And then you have to do your one thing better than anybody else did their one thing. You have to be able to protect your quarterback. You have to be able to run for 1 yard when you really need it. And the Steelers didn't do any of those things. But it seemed like they had the best chemistry, though.
They did, and I'll add one more. You have to have a legitimate left tackle, and the Steelers, you know, started the season with Marvell Smith, who will become a free agent. And then they end the season with Max Starks, who they wasn't even a starter at the beginning of the season, ends up playing the whole year at left tackle. If you were to tell me that the Steelers were going to win the Super Bowl and Max Starks was going to be the left tackle, I would say there's no way. So they violated a lot of the rules that you would use to indicate what is a true champion. And I give them a lot of credit. I think their resiliency and their toughness really overcame their lack of true talent, and their great players stepped up when they had to.
So it's reminiscent of maybe the second Patriots team that won the Super Bowl. Because the third one was a really, really good team. The second team, though, the one that beat the Panthers 32-29, that team secretly had a lot of holes. Receivers weren't quite there. Couldn't really run the ball. But all these other intangibles came into play, and it seems like that happened with the Steelers.
And looking at the three, you know, they've won the Super Bowls, but probably the best Patriot team was the one that lost the Super Bowl to the Giants.
You're right.
I mean, you know, if they were to play the other three teams that won, they would probably have gotten beat. So that's why it's so hard to say we can repeat, because there's so many facts. I mean, the Tennessee Titans, after having watched all these games being played, the playoffs and all that, to me, they're still the best team. They just don't have the trophy.
Right. Well, I asked Cousin Sal this. If Brady doesn't get hurt, does that swing it? Or were the Pats just too weak on defense?
You know, I think the weaknesses would have showed up, but obviously they could have managed the offense a little different. I mean, Matt Castle did an exceptional job. They probably don't lose one of those games. They probably beat Indianapolis. I think with Brady stays healthy, their holes on defense aren't as obvious. And, you know, obviously the injuries certainly played a factor. They lost a lot of guys down the stretch. But, you know, Brady would have closed the gap on them, probably would have beaten Pittsburgh at home. And, you know, that's the thing I think we learned from the Cardinals. When you have a great quarterback and you can have other problems on your team, the quarterback can carry it.
What about if it's not windy at Giants Stadium in round two?
I think the Giants could beat the Eagles. I really felt like the Giants were the better team. And I know they beat the Eagles beat them twice, and I live near Philadelphia and all that. But when I watched the game and studied the tape, to me, the Giants were pushing the Eagles around, but they couldn't throw the football because of the wind and Eli Manning's inability to make plays in the passing game. And obviously, they couldn't overcome the Plaxico Burress presence on their team. They had guys that maybe could make plays, but when Eli can't make easy throws first play of the game for a touchdown, it's tough to win games.
So we're chalking this up to a weird season. But you feel like Tennessee had the best team, but you're fine with Pittsburgh winning it.
Yeah, because I think Pittsburgh, you know, it's the obstacles course. They ran the challenge. Yeah. Had the hardest schedule in the NFL to play. They were able to do that. They beat teams. Maybe it wasn't pretty the way they won, but they were able to beat Dallas late in the game. They came back, beat Baltimore late in the game. They won on the road. They won at home. They met every obstacle course they had to face, and they did it, and they're the champions, and they deserve it. You know, but if we were to draft a team, you know, I'm not sure they would have a lot of players picked early, but not their whole team would be picked.
Where would their coach rank in that?
You know, I think he's pretty good. I think he has that unique ability to inspire and be inspiring. I just believe he's got a way to where he can bring himself into the team without it being on him. I thought his speech at the end of the game about the players and how he built a cohesive unit was very much in a different tone and a different style than Belichick, but it was very Belichickian. I think he's really good.
I really like him, too. I didn't think he called the greatest. I thought they botched a couple calls in that Super Bowl game. But overall, he did the best job this season. And the team, they just always played hard. You never, you know, their defense always showed up, it, really, until the second half of this Super Bowl game. Did you watch the tape yet?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, should that game have been even closer? Should the Steelers have won? Did the Harrison play swing it? Maybe the Cardinals should have won by 10? What'd you feel?
I felt there was points in the game where both teams could make a claim that who was the better team, but I think it was like two evenly matched heavyweight boxers that were fighting, and the one team that had enough gas left in the tank, the Steelers were able to win it. I think when you look at the game, the weaknesses of the Steelers showed up and the weaknesses of the Cardinals showed up, and I think that's clearly on the tape. I mean, you knew when the Steelers got the ball back with 2:38 to go in the game they were going to drive the ball down. You know, they were going to, because we knew that, we know the Cardinals are not fundamentally sound and can't play well in balance and can't tackle. But we also knew that the Cardinals could throw the football on the Steelers, and if you were going to do it, in spite of what they said in all the pregame shows about the running game, the only way you were going to move the ball on the Steelers was to throw it. So I thought they were essentially two evenly matched teams. I don't think there was a one team that was a 10. It was a team, they dominated each other at periods of the game like a good fighting match, like a good boxing match does.
By that last drive, Nate Washington was hurt. Hines Ward was, you know, a shell. Holmes was the only guy in the field that could really hurt the Cards. Why didn't they realize this, and what did they not do that they should have done?
Well, they should have played. They should have just said, look, the worst that's going to happen is we're going to get overtime. We're going to make them drive the ball down the field, and we can't give up any big plays. And naturally, that means they give up big plays. And you had to play a zone coverage, everybody's eyes on the quarterback. And I think the points of the game were symbolic on that drive. They didn't contain Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket. He was able to move. He bought himself some time. And every time they blitzed them or tried to make a play, it cost them on defense. And they weren't in position to make tackles because they're not a good tackling team. And I think that ultimately is what happened. And then for them to give up the touchdown is almost a crime, because the worst you want to do in that situation is not bend but don't break, but bend and live for overtime. Let's play this thing again.
Right.
And they gave up, and they gave up the play, and that's really what hurt them the most. I mean, I think their creativity and their ability to create turnovers on defense is what cost them essentially. And
although, wait, that was an A plus throw and an A plus catch. Like,
and I thought Ben said it well. He said, when I let it go, I thought it was going to be an interception. And when I watch that play on tape and I look at it, if Ralph Brown was in balance and he could jump without being on one leg, if he would have been in balance, he intercepts the ball. But that's how close the game was.
Right.
That's how close these two, and that's why I think these two teams are really close. Because if the Cardinals would have done a couple things, they could have won. The Steelers did a couple things and they won. And I think, you know, they play that game 10 times, probably both team wins 5.
I did not do a good enough job in yesterday's column of appreciating Roethlisberger in that game. He was really good. I should have had one paragraph in there talking about all the little stuff that he did that is unique to him. And I don't really know of any other QBs that just kind of can create that extra 2 seconds out of nothing, but aren't really scramblers either. He's got that Marino-like ability to just kind of move around. Where would you rank him right now in the QB, in the QB hierarchy of the guys playing right now?
You know, guys won 2 Super Bowls. He's clearly in the top 4. I mean, you know, you got Manning, you got Brady, and then I think...
Let's put it this way. You're GM of a team. We're redrafting the entire league. Where would you rank him on your QB list for guys I want to get next 10 years?
He would be, let's see, Brady would be 1, Manning would be 2. I think he's 3. I think he could be 3. You know, Carson Palmer at times, but the bad elbow makes you come off him.
What about Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan, he's better than Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan has to be almost in the system. Ben Roethlisberger, he makes the system.
I think he's 3. I agree. I think he's – I would even put him ahead of Peyton, because Peyton's old now. Peyton's like quietly like 33.
Yeah, and, you know, Drew Brees is another guy you think about, but Drew is just a – Drew's a great stat guy. Drew's the George Gervin of the NFL.
Nice.
He's going to put up great numbers, but, you know, at the end of the day, his team doesn't win and his team has no toughness. And not that it's Drew's fault, but that's essentially what the Saints become. Whereas Roethlisberger, people can't imagine. Like, I thought the best play of the game, and I think this is the one area of the column I thought you maybe didn't give enough credit to. When you watch the tackle made by Gabe Watson on the quarterback draw, which I screamed to my wife, you and I both probably knew it was going to be quarterback draw. That, to get Ben Roethlisberger down on with that one hand, I think it might have been the tackle of the year.
Oh, because of Roethlisberger's side. Yeah.
He's so hard to tackle. He's
right.
Impossible. You could go through 20 plays in that game where a guy had more of a hand on Ben Roethlisberger than Gabe Watson did and couldn't even get him close to the ground. And, look, the call was predictable. You know, we all said it at home. Maybe it was a little bit too too basic. They didn't want to turn the ball over. They wanted to come away with three. I think they didn't want to leave the stadium taking points off the board. So it was the right call, maybe. And with that big guy, you don't think he's going to go down on that arm tackle. I don't know how strong Gabe Watson must really be, because to me, that was the play of the turnaround, because that's a hard tackle to make.
My issue with the play was this, other than the fact that I just don't think that play should be run unless it's somebody like McNair or Garrard, somebody that's a little more agile than Ben is, but I didn't think he sold it well. That's a play where you need to take that one extra step back and really make it seem like you're going to throw, and then you go. Yeah. He was like, from the moment he was stepping back, you felt like he was just going to stop and go forward. But it was just poorly executed.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, that oftentimes when you rush to get into a play is when it doesn't sell the play. And I think there's probably not a lot of confidence. I mean, Ben doesn't run that play like if that were Jake Plummer or even Jay Cutler, who runs it all the time. You know, it would have been a lot easier. Excuse me, it would have been a lot easier.
Wow. That was our first sneeze on the podcast, I think.
I'm sorry.
The other thing that Sal and I just talked about, Roethlisberger, the way that, you know, he can really not play that great, but then turn it on. What other QBs that can you remember that had that ability to kind of shake off whatever mediocre game they're having or bad game or nondescript game, whatever, and can turn it on like he did in that last drive?
It's what I call the Allen Iverson theory. And I got this because from watching Donovan McNabb and being in Philadelphia and liking the Sixers, Iverson would go in his heyday, not now. He would go 9 for 30, and you'd say, God, he's terrible. But he would make two plays at the end of the game or during the game that won the game for the team. Mm. And Roethlisberger does that. And Donovan McNabb does that. Now, everybody in Philadelphia is saying McNabb could have never driven the ball down the field in that drive like Roethlisberger did. Well, I would disagree with that. I think McNabb doesn't have nearly the skill players around him that Roethlisberger does. You know, when Kevin Curtis is your main guy you're throwing the ball to, you're not a great receiving core. Let's be real honest here. So I think McNabb's one of those guys that can make who when you look at the stat sheet, you don't really see all the things he does in the game that helps him win. McNabb's like Roethlisberger, but he gets away from as many sacks as you think he almost could get him sacked. He buys himself some time, even on the throws that people complain about. It's because he's moving away from contact. Same thing with Roethlisberger. I mean, that throw he makes on third down on the second score, I mean, that easily could have been intercepted when he throws the ball across the formation. The throw he makes against Baltimore, you know, it left his hand. I thought that was an interception. The guy has a unique ability to make plays, but his uniqueness comes from being able to escape. And you can't look at him in the stat sheet and say, geez, what happened? I think the stat sheet for Ben Roethlisberger in that game was, he only turned the ball over one time and there were no fumbles, something that he had always done prior to that.
But that's a quality that he had in college, right?
No doubt. He clearly was very good at being able to buy a second look, move around the pocket for a guy who was viewed as a stumbling kind of quarterback, not a flea-footed guy. But he was able to do it, and a little bit of it, which made it difficult, was when you watched him on those college tapes, the level of comp was never great enough, so you thought he couldn't do it at the next level because he wasn't doing it against Auburn or Alabama or Tennessee.
Right.
He was doing it against, you know, Ball State, you know, and Central Michigan and teams like that. And you're thinking, geez, can he really make this jump? And, you know, obviously he did.
So he was doing that in college, but everybody thought, oh, when the game gets faster, he's not going to be able to pull that crap anymore. And yet he still is pulling that crap. I have two counters to your Allen Iverson theory. First of all, that's the Dennis Johnson theory. God forbid that, or how dare you use Iverson when Dennis Johnson was the master of going 2 for 14 and then making the two biggest shots of the game. He played before Iverson, so he gets that theory. You have to switch that.
All right.
Second, there is no way in hell that McNabb pulls off that final drive. There's no way. There is no way. It does not happen. He is
does
heaving.
Does McNabb not do it, or does Andy mismanage the two-minute drill, which historically has been more the case than McNabb mismanaging it? Go back to the Super Bowl. I mean, look at some of the play calls in the game in the 2 minutes.
Are you talking the Eagles-Pat Super Bowl or the current Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, the one where he throws the interception. I mean, you have to go through the whole situation of the game, you know.
I think you think more highly of McNabb, I think, than you should be, because Even in that Arizona game, when they needed him to come back and bring them down the field and they showed that close-up of him, I think every Eagles fan knew that that game was over.
I think that's the permeating view back here. But when you really look at the tape and you watch it, they throw four straight passes, of which two of the passes, the receiver slip. I'm not sure there's many teams that Hank Baskett plays for in the NFL. I'm not sure there's many teams that Jason Avant can be, you know, one of the main cogs of the receiving corps. I mean, you know, when you look at what Ben Roethlisberger's throwing to, and look at Kurt Warner. I mean, you know, Steve Breslin had over 1,000 yards.
But you can't tell me that Roethlisberger's effect that he has on his teammates and the confidence he has, and they know that he can turn it on and that they're in good hands. I don't think the Eagles feel that way about Donovan McNabb. Now, I'm just an innocent bystander watching this on TV, but I don't think that he instills that same kind of confidence in his teammates, which is really like half of what being a quarterback is. You disagree?
Yeah, I do disagree. I think the one thing that the one thing McNabb has been is he's been, with the John Madden term, the great deodorant for a lot of the Eagles' sins, and he's covered them up, and he's been able to make some plays that keep them in a lot of games. And I think when you look at the winning record of this guy and the conference championship games that he's gotten to, it's just remarkable to me. And they still don't have, you know, they still don't have that legitimate guy outside that helps the guy, takes him out, that saves him from some of those bad throws that Roethlisberger gets saved from.
Do you want to now defend Chris Webber?
No, I don't want to defend Chris Webber.
Let's go through the whole list. Elvin Hayes.
I just think the poor guy takes a beating. I think obviously there's things he could do better, and certainly his accuracy is always going to be a question, and I would never dispute that with anyone. His accuracy is always a doubt.
What are your thoughts on A-Rod?
You know, that's not my area of expertise, baseball. But my father, the barber, who's 82 years old, cuts hair every day. He was a Yankee fan, obviously, East Coast Italian man. That's part of the DNA. You have to root for the Yankees. He doesn't like A-Rod at all. I can't deal with under the pressure. So I'll go with him on that one.
I think you might be right. McNabb might have led the game-winning drive that Roethlisberger led, but he would have thrown up at some point during the drive. I think that's the one difference. But not from being scared, just from being out of shape. The guy's, you know, a good 20 pounds heavier than he should be. So the season is now over. The Steelers have won the Super Bowl title. Now what happens?
Well, now it gets interesting. Now more games will be won now than they are actually during the season. It's how teams manage their team, what they do to make improvements to their football team. And in this free agent climate where a lot of teams have cap room, and there's a couple really good free agents that are going to make it to the market. If Albert Haynesworth makes it, Jordan Gross makes it, there's some teams that can really get strengthened. And I don't think there's going to be as much competition for some of these great players because some teams in this economy are struggling. This is truly when the revenue sharing of the NFL and all that complaining that was done back in 2006 is going to come to fruition. The teams that are not making great money on their stadiums and on the other items are not going to be as active as the teams that have the money in the free from great stadium deals.
It's going to be very interesting to see this specific year, 2009, how the economy affects football and baseball. Because we're starting to see it in basketball already, but the economy turned in August, and a lot of the season tickets in the NBA you'd already had to put your deposit and all that stuff. Baseball, I think, is going to be the first hit. And then you look at the NFL, it's really not that much fun to go to an NFL game, as I wrote about last November, you know, the TV timeouts and how expensive it is and the state-of-the-art stadiums stink. And I want to see if some of these football stadiums or football teams are going to be selling out these luxury boxes and club seats and all this crap. I really don't think they will.
I think it's a really hard economy. I think the Giants and the Jets, the Cowboys, the teams that have built these new stadiums that are trying to sell tickets in this economy is very difficult. And it's obviously an expensive item, and it's a very it's a luxury item, and people do away with that in a time of this recession that's going on or whatever we're dealing with. But I think it's going to affect but it doesn't affect the players' salaries because that's directly linked to the TV networks.
Right.
And what I don't think the average fan really understands is when this uncapped year comes in 2010, That will become the windfall for the owners. Everybody views it the opposite way. They think this is going to be great for the players, and my team is really going to get strong because my owner will spend money. And I would caution everyone and say, take a step back. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the uncapped year doesn't have a minimum amount placed on spending. And that will truly be the era of the Florida Marlins and the Yankees. You'll see a complete contrast in teams because some teams are going to need to get their balance sheets in order, and they're going to use that uncapped year to do it.
Is it just one uncapped year?
Well, until they get a collective bargaining agreement, it'll be always uncapped. For example, people are saying, why would the Patriots franchise Matt Castle? Well, quarterbacks are really an important investment, obviously. Look at the Arizona Cardinals. They got great quarterback play. They went to the Super Bowl. So that's one reason. But the other reason is, in 2010, Matt Castle won't be a free agent because when the uncapped year, free agency then goes to 6 years, and Matt would have only had 5 years in the system. So it allows you to work around it. So players that are going to be free agents in 2010 under the collective bargaining agreement today won't be 2010 because it goes up to 6 years. And so that's what makes franchising Matt Castle much more attractive, and it makes him more valuable in a trade market. I could trade him to you, and you'll have his rights for 2 years.
Yeah, but he's getting traded in April. Brady's throwing BBs in some park somewhere in California, and he's fine.
I don't disagree with that, but I understand why the Patriots have to franchise him. He is a tremendous commodity that's worth more than just a third round compensatory pick before the first day of the draft is over.
Well, let's talk. I wanted to ask you about that because there's some potential homes for him. What, in your opinion, what do you think his value is before the draft?
Well, that one I think is easily it's got to be now. You know, the NFL has become a little bit like the NBA in the sense that the first round needs to be broken down into lotteries and sections. I mean, if I said a one and a three, well, you know, I mean, do you want Carolina's one and their three, which is in the 20s? That's not really that's not a value for Matt Castle, you know? Matt Castle needs to be a top 10 pick in terms of the value of the pick, a high one and probably a three.
The Chiefs?
The Chiefs make a lot of sense, although they would argue that they don't need them because of Tyler Thigpen. But the Chiefs, we haven't heard a peep from the Chiefs since Pioli took the job there. They've gone under, you talk about a bunker, there's nothing been out there. They've closed all ranks, so there's nothing to do there. But I do believe there's some sense that some people in the building think Tyler Thigpen can be their solution.
Good luck. If you're the Detroit Lions, would you rather give that number one pickup for Matt Castle and pay him the money, or would you rather take Matt Stafford and pay him that money and not be sure if he's going to be good or not?
I think both questions could apply to the same player. When you take Matt Castle from the Patriots, you can't feel with 100% certainty that unless he's brought into the right system with the right time. I thought you could say that if Josh McDaniel were the head coach of the Detroit Lions with 100% certainty.
Right.
But without McDaniels, I don't know if you could say that. And I think you have to weigh that balance. Matt Stafford, or do you go with Matt Castle? My sense of it, knowing the Lions, they'll start fresh. But I wrote about this morning on the Post. They have to start fresh. They've got to perform the exorcism. Quit blaming Matt Millen for everything. It's already the dog's dead. Quit kicking him and move forward and get a quarterback in there to start the program.
I wonder. Yeah, I just thought of a weird trade. If Denver traded Jay Cutler to Detroit for two first rounders and then gave one of those first rounders to the Pats for Castle and reunited Castle and McDaniel, that would never happen. They never trade Cutler.
No, Cutler, there's not enough value on your team to get Cutler from, and that's what happens to great players. You know, that's what makes this free agency market so unique. Albert Haynesworth, you know, what is he worth in the open market? I think this is going to be Reggie White-ish in terms of the people going after him.
Is that your number one most fascinating offseason subplot? Where does Haynesworth go?
Yeah, where does Haynesworth go, and what does Carolina do with two really good offensive and defensive linemen, Julius Peppers and Jordan Gross? You know, one of those guys has got to be free because they haven't been able to get the other one signed. And so I think that's going to be a very compelling story. I know people here in Philadelphia, They could use either player. They've got tons of cap room, and they've got tons of cash. That's the other equation that you have to ask yourself, if whatever team you root for, is not only do we have cash, do we have cap room, do we have cash?
What do you think of the Pats waiving Richard Seymour, who's been overrated for really 3 years, getting his cap figure off, and then trading Castle to Carolina for Peppers? That's my stupid sports radio fan question of the podcast.
I think a lot of why Richard Seymour hasn't played as well is I'm not sure Richard Seymour's been as healthy as he's been.
Yeah, but isn't that who he is at this point? At some point, you got to say, all right, maybe this is one of those guys who's just not durable.
Well, I think that's certainly an argument you could make. The durability is an issue with him. But to me, when he's really humming and he's going, you know, the downside is sometimes Peppers doesn't really roll and hum too, and Peppers would have to fit into that system. My inclination is I think they're going to get more out of Seymour once he gets healthy than they would make in that trade.
What do the Giants do with Plax?
The Giants are in line because the New York City is first, and there's a 99.5% conviction rate on that crime in New York City. So, you know, I don't know who his attorney is, but he's up for a stiff challenge to get him to be able, if he's proven guilty of this charge, to be able to get out of going to jail. It's going to be a tough offseason for Plax. Because that's the mayor's law, that's what the mayor believes in. It's made New York one of the safest cities in the world right now because of that law. It's hard to carry. You don't want to carry a gun in New York City.
Terrell Owens?
Well, you know, I mean, now I see they're doing a reality show. Yesterday on the website, we posted the odds for the Super Bowl next year from one of the gambling websites. I'm not sure which one, but we did. And they were, the Cowboys are 9-1 to go to the Super Bowl. I don't see it. I think T.O. will just keep tearing down the team.
I saw those odds, and that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
9-1 is absurd for that.
I don't know if they're paying attention. I don't think they're... I think that's a Nielsen rating more than it is what they should go into the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, I just don't see the Cowboys having, you know, we talked about the Steelers. We talked about they weren't the greatest team, but they had the best chemistry of their team. That's nothing we would ever talk about with that. I thought it was interesting that Roy Williams now has become a spokesman for the team, and he's deciding on what's good for the team. Roy Williams didn't learn the plays, struggled to make any contribution, and now he's got an opinion. Something's wrong here. You know, at some point you have to – you know, you got to play to be able to speak up, don't you?
I thought, out of those odds that I was looking at, I thought Seattle at 50-1 was kind of interesting.
Well, there's some talk that Seattle's going to make a move on their quarterback. There's some talk that Matt Hasselbeck, you could have Matt Hasselbeck. If you're Minnesota, would you trade your first-round pick for Matt Hasselbeck?
Yes, I would. Yes, immediately.
I think you would, too. I think Matt Hasselbeck is liked more by people that don't watch Seattle play all the time. I think Matt Hasselbeck's great. I took a lot of crap from my son because I recommended him for him in his stat league, and Hasselbeck had a disastrous year, which I didn't know he was going to get hurt, but I thought Hasselbeck's a little bit like Drew Brees. He puts up great numbers.
The Chiefs are 100-1. I thought that was interesting because they had a big draft last year. I actually felt like they underachieved with Herm. I thought they were better, and you know why they underachieved with Herm, because Herm was their coach. I felt like that was not a bad nucleus of talent there, and then now they're going to have a top pick and a new coach, Pioli. I don't know. 100-1 is interesting.
A ton of cap room, a bad division to play in. I mean, obviously.
Really bad division. And that's why I like Seattle at 50-1 too, because you figure, you know, they're in the NFC West. They're going to have an easy schedule.
They have to find a way to rush the passer, you know. They did the classic baseball trade. They traded a guy, Jared Allen, who could get stats. You know how baseball, when we were kids, that you'd have a great pitcher, a team have good pitching staff, they trade a pitcher to a team to get a hitter, and then 3 months later they're all looking for pitching again? Well, that's what the Chiefs did. You know, they traded a great pass rusher to the Vikings, and last year they had 10 sacks as a team.
I hated that trade. Well, the thing I hated most about that trade was they claimed it was – you know, it's time for a youth movement, but left out the part that Jared Allen is 26 or 26 when they made the trade. It's like, well, if he's 26, that conceivably is part of the youth movement. So anyway, you think Haynesworth is the number one story, what the Pats do with Matt Castle, what Carolina does, how the Plax thing plays out. I don't really care what happens with Dallas because I don't think anything interesting will happen with them. Is there any other team subplot that you think could ranks up with those?
I think the LT situation is going to get rectified before it becomes out of control. I think the team that's interesting is the Packers. They had a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. You know, their quarterback was on the job training. I think he's going to get better. I think they'll get their injuries back as a football team. I think they could be a dangerous team with the right kind of offseason that they have. And the other team, and I say this and I'm going to kick myself, are the Saints, because they're so good on offense that if the Arizona Cardinals can get to a Super Bowl, as good as they are on offense, then the Saints should be able to get there. And that division won't be, you know, there's going to be through some changes down in Tampa now that Gruden's not there. Carolina's going to have to go through some changes this year because of the free agents, and they don't have a lot of cap room. Mm-hmm. Carolina's in a tough situation. And, of course, Atlanta's, you know, they're going to rebuild their team a little bit more. They won those games, but defensively they have a lot of work to do. So New Orleans is a team that always interests me because they can score and they can move the football.
I got to say, the Pats at 8-1, you figure
well,
they,
you know,
they...
when you get Tom Brady back and you add, I'm sure they're going to re-sign Lamont Jordan and get another back and, you know, refix that offensive line that kind of, and they'll get another, they'll get a tight end that can help them. And then they'll get younger on defense, which is what they really need to do.
Well,
but
I think we have the 16th pick. And then not to mention if they traded Castle and got another first rounder, get two of the top 16 potentially.
Yeah. You know,
that's
so
pretty enticing.
The other story, I think, is Baltimore, what they do with Ray Lewis. These are kind of older players, but I think they're an interesting team to talk about. And then the other team to talk about is Cincinnati. Is you know, unless they can really feel good that Carson Palmer's going to come back, it's going to go from worse to worse there.
Mm. All right.
They're bad.
I'll let you go because we've kept you for far too long. So you're going to be on Showtime's Inside the NFL on Wednesday?
2 more weeks. We got Showtime coming up. Yep, we sure do. So
2 more weeks. What are you going to do the week after this week?
We're gonna plot the whole off season for you.
Oh.
That's why we needed you to come on the show to help us talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not even allowed to go on radio shows. Well, listen.
You're on double secret probation, aren't you?
For the time being, people can go to your site at nationalfootballpost.com. You're going to be keeping track of all the stuff that happens, but we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back in like, what do you think, 6 weeks? When does stuff start happening?
Well, at the end of the month, the 27th is when free agency starts, and that'll be really booming. And then, of course, the draft. We've got to talk about the draft and get everybody's picks for that and see what's going on. So, that's kind of this free agency will go for about 10 days in March. It'll slow down. And then from there, it'll be all just nothing but draft and get ready for that part of the game. And I think you'll see more trades in football now. I think people are willing to make a little bit more move. I think desperation is going to be a bigger factor, and I think you'll see a little bit more trades this offseason.
Ooh, maybe I can convince ESPN.com to do an NFL trade machine. I know I would play with it constantly.
I do all the time on the – I mean, I've made the Sixers into one heck of a basketball team.
Oh, I love the fact that Elton's untradeable now. All right, we'll talk to you in a few weeks. Check you out on nationalfootballpost.com and Showtime. I'm sorry I didn't listen to you about the Cards keeping it close. I have a lot of regrets.
I tried to help. I tried to help as best I could, but, you know, you had your mind. You know, you violate the first rule of scouting, which is you begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
You know, and so you collect data to support your already conceived theory. See, the idea of scouting is to never begin with the end in mind. It's just collect data until you feel like it's time to make a decision.
I feel bad. I won't even make fun of you about 14 blasts for like another 9 months. But eventually I'll start doing it again. All right, we'll talk to you in a few weeks. Mike Lombardi, thanks for everything this season.
Sorry for sneezing.
It was great. It was our first sneeze ever. All right, thanks. All right, so before we head out on this podcast, I wanted to read a couple emails that I got since the Super Bowl. You can call this like a little deleted scene section. Apparently, Kato Kaelin picked the Cardinals. SI.com had asked all these different celebrities, and I got this email from Cliff in New Haven that said, I just thought you should know you're now betting against God, Pakistan, puppies, and Kato Kaelin. That might have swung my pick. I might have gone Cardinals +7 if I had known about that. Next time Kato Kaelin makes a Super Bowl pick, please, by all means, let me know before I make mine. Sam in Miami asked if Bernard Pollard got his ring with the rest of the Steelers or do they mail it to him in private. I really don't know the answer to that. Keith in Clemson thought that somebody should make a movie called The Curious Case of Brenda Warner. a sequel to Benjamin Button. I thought that was interesting. She has gotten younger and much prettier, and I'm not sure what happened when, you know, considering the last Super Bowl was 9 years ago. In my Super Bowl column, I had a little thing about an argument I had about whether anybody under the age of 35 in America was named Dick, whether that name, you know, officially died or not. And apparently, a Seattle sports station, KJR AM, has a personality named Dick Fain, and he's under 35. Also, if you go on Facebook, there's some college kids who have the name Dick. Now, I don't know if they're named Dick as a joke or what happened, but the point is there's some under 35 Dicks out there. And that was fun to say in the podcast. Igor in Chicago was among many readers who mentioned that after the winning touchdown, Santonio Holmes used the football as a prop. He poured some fake powder on it and then did the LeBron James, slapped his hands and made the ball go. That should have been a 15-yard penalty. I agree. Renee in Seattle said that a lady friend called the final touchdown the tippy-toe catch. So on the year after the helmet catch, we now have the tippy-toe catch. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's going to catch on, but it was a nice way to describe it. Earl in Washington thinks that I should hire John Torturo's agent, and he says that after the agent got Torturo the Heineken spot, that that agent could also probably get my next book on the Oprah Book Club. I think that's possible. That could be exciting. Let's see, a couple more. When Pittsburgh called that last time out after Holmes made that catch, he got tackled on the 5-yard line, and I mentioned in a column that I didn't understand when they called timeout. I've heard two theories on this that different readers sent. One was that Nate Washington got hurt on the play, which I haven't been able to find out if that was true. The other was that, and I remember watching this when it happened, Holmes decided to really kind of act it up after he got tackled and just basically walked toward the end zone and was doing the whole thing, yeah, I'm the man. And meanwhile, his team was running up behind him. And there's a theory that that's why the Steelers had to call a timeout, because the Super Bowl MVP was just wandering, you know, basically toward the cheerleaders. I don't know if that's true or not. A lot of hockey fans, including Don Draper himself, John Hamm, emailed me with just complete disgust that I did not include in the Lakers-Pistons 1988 finals how that game ended, and then how this game ended in the all-time shady endings, that I did not include the Brett Hull goal. I can't speak. The Brett Hull goal that ended the 1999 Stanley Cup that killed the Buffalo Sabres. I didn't forget about the goal. I just forgot about hockey. So that's my explanation there. Now I'm kind of getting back into hockey because the Bruins are good, but that's a whole other story. We talked about the Larry Fitzgerald thing. Oh, this is a big one. So I wrote that Roethlisberger had maybe the fattest face the secretly fattest face of any athlete playing right now, and wondered if he had the fattest face of any quarterback ever. A lot of people said, how dare you forget about Jim Plunkett? Now, here's my counter. I don't think Plunkett had a fat face. He just had a giant head. He had one of the biggest heads. It's really between him and Barry Bonds for the biggest heads of any athlete in my lifetime. His head was gigantic. It was like the old So I Married an Axe Murderer, like the planet, like that, hey, oh boy, look like Sputnik. His head was gigantic, and I think I remember reading this, and I never knew if it was true or not, but I've always wanted it to be true, so I'm passing it along. Apparently, they had to, like, specially make his helmet. Like, they had to take two helmets, split them in at, like, the two-third mark, and then graft them together. That was always the urban legend. I never knew if that was true. But Jim Plunkett had the biggest head. His head was so big that I almost wish that they had done a Sports Century special on it. I would have liked to have seen childhood pictures of his head, and I'd like to see his head now. I'd like to see if it's even bigger. So I don't know. I don't know if I have to recant that. I would go with that Roethlisberger is the fattest face, but Plunkett has the biggest head. I think there are two separate categories. And then finally, I like this email from the J-Bugs friend, Michael Matonis, who was totally appalled by Harrison's personal foul in the Super Bowl, and he said there was grounds for ejection. He makes an interesting point about there shouldn't be a 9-inch penalty Because what happened was they had downed the ball at the two. Harrison committed the penalty. The ball was basically moved 9 inches. It was half the distance to the goal. Michael is saying that that's the dumbest rule in sports. How do you have a penalty that's only worth 9 inches, especially when this guy is just beating up another guy for 10 solid seconds? He was arguing that it's a personal foul. If it's a personal foul inside the 15, it's a safety. I thought that was interesting. I don't think that would ever happen, but can you imagine? Maybe you tweak it that if it's a personal foul inside the 5-yard line, it's a safety. I don't know. But when you think of that, like a holding penalty in the end zone is a safety, maybe not a terrible idea to have a personal foul be a safety. So good job of the J-Bugs friends. And finally, we got two Joe Mead related emails. Joe, you know, I got to say your performance has been spotty. You've missed like 3 podcasts. There was 2 where you were sick and 1 that you allegedly couldn't drive in bad weather or something. Let's have it out. What's going on?
I'm sorry, Bill. I haven't been feeling so great, you know?
Well, what does that mean? What do you mean it hasn't? This isn't like the 3rd grade where you get to just stay home because you had the sniffles. Like, what kind of illness did you have?
Bill, I felt like I was dying a couple weeks ago.
What'd you have? What was it?
I don't know. Dizziness. I went to the doctor. He's like, whatever. Take some allergy pills. You know, they don't know what's going on.
You missed 2 podcasts.
I know. It's terrible.
And then what happened with the weather? Like, really? You couldn't drive into work?
Well, the thing is, our Emmy Award-winning Jacqueline Purdy, she lives much closer to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to save our group. You know, we're into a lot of cost-cutting. You know, the economy's bad. Didn't want to make me drive for like an hour and a half when she could just come here in 5 minutes.
Joe, I got to be honest. You're on notice. We have Subway coming on as a sponsor.
That's right.
In mid-February. The podcast is really taking off. I mean, it's really like it's between the BS Report and Oprah right now for what's the bigger media entity. I need you to step it up. I don't want you to miss 2 podcasts again because you were sick. And if it's bad weather, rent a Zamboni and drive to work.
Okay.
You know, this is, we're big time now. We're not just like the little podcast that, you know, nobody could find it on ESPN.com and blah, blah, blah.
No, I need
you to step it up.
It's going to be the biggest thing on ESPN.com and I want to be there for it. So I won't let you down.
Yeah. I need you to step it up. And if you feel sick the next time, you know, take that stuff. What do you take when you go on air? Take Airborne. Take some Airborne the night before.
I haven't tried that.
All right, here's 2 emails, 2 Joe Mead related emails that I've been waiting to read for 3 weeks, but unfortunately you haven't been showing up to work. Matt from Chicago says, "It seems like Joe Mead never sounds happy when he talks on your podcast. Every time he talks, I get the impression he is thinking, what am I doing with my life? I think you should give some love to Joe Mead on your next podcast." Look, I would have, but he didn't show up really for the last 3 weeks. You don't really feel that way, do you?
No, absolutely not.
You're happy to be here, right?
I'm very happy to be here. Usually I'm napping during the podcast and you wake me up and then I'm like, what's going on?
Because this guy compared the look on your, the look that he thinks that is on your face to the look that Derrick Rose has when he looks around and sees Joaquin Noah, Tyrus Thomas, and Larry Hughes next to him. Yeah. I thought that scared me a little, so I want to make sure that wasn't true.
No,
that's not true.
My situation is a lot better than his.
Okay. And then Mark from Charlotte says, "I think producer Joe Mead is an underutilized member of the BS Report. Today, I guess he's talking about when I was making fun of you that it was 70 degrees and it was like a blizzard back in Bristol."
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the 3 times you did the podcast out of the last 10. he said, "Today I pictured him holed up in a small studio, producing your show amidst a blizzard with dozens of cigarette butts in an ashtray and a fifth of bourbon draining into a rocks glass in front of the mixing board. When will you stop holding him back and allowing him to flourish and possibly become the Robin Quivers of your podcast?" I think that'd be tough since you're a man. But
right. I wouldn't want to be the Robin Quivers.
Right. You wouldn't want to be the Robin Quivers. So anyway, are you smoking or drinking during the podcast?
I am not. There's actually no smoking or drinking allowed in the studio anymore. We just got signs posted.
Bristol just gets better and better. It's so much fun. What a fun place. I got to move back. Well, listen, for the listeners out there, if you have questions for Joe Mead, I think in 2009 we're really going to delve into Joe's life a little bit more. And we really should have last year when we found out that your bachelor party was held at the U.S. Tennis Open. This year we're going to find out more about you, Joe.
And I've been very mysterious. So
yeah, you've
I'm
been a little too
to
mysterious.
This.
But here's the problem. You got to actually show up for work. So no more illnesses, and if there's bad weather, don't just pass it off to Jacqueline.
Okay. I'll take this as my last warning.
If you have to walk to work, how far do you live from work?
35 miles. But walking, it's actually only 25, so I could...
35 miles. I still feel like you could have done more. You're just like too happy to pass it off.
No, I know. I apologize.
All right.
To all the listeners.
Maybe it should be like, remember in Ferris Bueller where you get 10, you skip 10 days and you have to repeat school?
For the whole school year, 10 days?
Remember that? He was at 9 days and the principal was ready to suspend him, but then Ferris went on the computer
he
hacked in. So I'm going to say you get, I don't even think 10's too high of a number. I'm going to say 8. So in 2009, you've already used up 3.
Okay. No more.
No more. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure you're committed. I was worried about it. I need to know you have my back and stuff.
Oh, I got your back, Bill.
Okay.
I've been fighting for you for years.
Okay. All right. And when is it? 2 weeks from now, we have the Subway Buzz Line we're going to premiere.
Yeah.
And I get to call Jacko on the Subway Buzz Line.
Outstanding. I'll work on some production.
Maybe we could have the guys from Theocracy do the $5 footlong for Jacko.
Okay.
5 minute phone call. Yeah, it'd be good. I'm excited to have a sponsor.
Finally.
Do I get free stuff? That's all I want to know. Do I get that like that card where I can go in and buy a sandwich?
You should. They say like all these celebrities, athletes who, you know, start promoting Subway, you know, the joke is that they all get free sandwiches. So I think you ought to get that privilege too.
How jealous is Jay that he's not the producer of a Subway-produced podcast?
Extremely.
It's got to be killing him, right?
No, it is. His podcast, I don't know what he's got going for sponsorships, but Subway, you can't get any better than that.
Well, the all-female podcast got Vivid Video signed on as a sponsor, right?
I think so. That might still be in the works.
Jay's up to stuff.
Jay's doing things.
Jay's going to be just let out of Bristol in handcuffs one day. All right, we're going to come back tomorrow with our special celebrity guest. And I'm not going to divulge who that is, but it is a celebrity. Until then, thanks for stepping it up. Thanks for committing to the show. And Joe, you're on watch. All right?
All right.
All right. Just want to make sure. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow on the BS Report.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.